Mr. David Butler, Reel 14. Now, tell us about the Crossing the Line ceremony. Were you involved in that?
I was a guest of King Neptune. I was.
This is my first time
I'd crossed the line. And we got there, and it's great fun because the people who've crossed the line before, they have to go and give the names forward, and they get dressed up in different gear. And there's Neptune, Kelly, a seaman, Kelly was Queen Neptune, and the captain had been he'd never crossed the line before, so he got involved, and there was all sorts of things. King Neptune, I can't think who it was now, but they was there, and we all dress up in quaint gear. There's all sorts of rigs going, but it's great fun, and you have to get dipped and ducked and all sorts, and you'd have to salute the King Neptune, and he passes you, and we get a certificate, which is down there, and then the Queen Neptune and all that, and you have to kiss her hand, and there's seals, and there's all sorts of fish, seahorses, blokes dressed as seahorses, and everything, and you have to go and pay homage to all them, and it's real good fun. And I think it took something like a forenoon watch for it all to happen. But it was really brilliant. And I'm glad, ever so glad, that I got at least one chance of doing it. And then from there we went to, as I said, Buenos Aires. And it's one of them days when anything can happen when you're crossing the line. Anything. Once we left Buenos Aires, we went to Montevideo, Uruguay. Once again, I went ashore the first day. We never played football on the first day we got there. And I went and we went into this bar, and I was talking to the chap, and I didn't realise he had owned it, but he owned this bar, and I was talking to him, and we was talking football. Well, we'd had some South American teams up, and English team and European teams into England, getting ready for the World Cup that was going to come in 1966. And that started coming over early to get used to the temperature and the playing surfaces and one thing about. And I was talking about the different teams and what. And he was quite amazed that as a European, I suppose you could call us a European, we realised how much knowledge we had about their South American football. They didn't think so. But at the same time that we was down there, for the week we was there, Uruguay were playing Brazil, which had come down for some training before the cup final, the European Cup finals got started, and they was doing some training down there and playing each other again. And I think, if I remember rightly, it was 1-1, 0-0, 1-1 each time. And they was preparing for the 1962 Cup. That's right. They'd been over, some of them had been over to us playing, but they was preparing for the 1962 Cup, which I think was in America. I think it was in America, that was. And that's why. And anyway, I got talking to him, and it turned out that he was a director of the Montevideo Football Club. And I went up there, and I refereed him the next, and we got talking, and he invited me up to the Montevideo Club. I said, well, I can't come up tomorrow because I'm refereeing a football match. And that was another thing that surprised him, that I was a referee. Why, I don't know. But he was ever so pleased, and I went, and he sent a car for me on, we'll say, the Wednesday of the week, and he sent a car down the jetty for me on the Wednesday, and I took two other players with me, and we spent a day up at the Montevideo Football Club, and then we had lunch with the Brazilians and the Uruguay team as they was playing in the evening. And so we stopped up there, and we had box seats up there, and we got tickets for the game afterwards. We'd got tickets for the first game, then we was guests at the first, and they gave us free tickets to see the third game as well. So I was most impressed with that, and he was just an ordinary everyday bloke, but he was so good. He was so good at it, and so friendly.
What's the next thing you remember?
Spending Christmas in Buenos Aires. Once again, it was you started off with football again. But it was brilliant. We went ashore Christmas Eve, and we just trawled around the bars and one thing another. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, we called at this cafe, and there must have been about 12 of us, 13, 14 of us. And we had steak for Christmas morning lunch, breakfast. Steak, loads of eggs, chips and that. And I think, if I remember rightly, you were talking about 10 old shillings for the lot. And it was brilliant. And then we went back on board. After we'd had our breakfast and that, we wandered back on board. And we then had to the captain's rounds and the first lieutenant's rounds and whatever to serve us Christmas lunch. It's always awkward when you're on a mess deck because the ship is broken down and the captain can only really graciously come down and have a drink with you because there's so many mess decks to do and you can't do them once lunch is served. But the captain come down and all the officers and done a bit of serving or had a drink with us, whatever the case may be. And the rest of the day speaks for itself. It's just an idle lay around, having a few beers and whatever day. And then some of us went shopping the next day, Boxing Day, because it didn't mean much to them. And we had a wander around. And then we had a naval liaison officer come aboard. And I found out that two of the local teams, Boca Juniors and River Plate, were playing each other on the Saturday in a football match in the stadium. So I spoke to the liaison officer I went on the quarter deck and we had a liaison officer on the ship, and I asked him if it was possible that we could get tickets to go to the thing. And he actually came back with 12 tickets for us. And we went to see the Boca Juniors and River Plate game. And I'm trying to think of the centre half who got sent off in England. But anyway, we went to see it, and once again we was given a box and shown around the club, and it was really, really most enjoyable. And like everything else for us, it was just shopping, footballing and drinking when you go out for a couple of points, or you stop on board because you can't afford them and that. And then when we left there, we sailed 300 miles up the River Plate to a town called Rosario, which very, very few ships get up that way. And that was really good. Another nice place. Same thing happens again, though. You play football. We went out in the evening, and we went to the local naval, seaman's mission. Not naval, seaman's mission. And we stayed in there until 11:30, and then we spoke to the chap in charge, and we said, you know, what happens in the town? He said, oh, not much happened in town until New Year. And we said, well, where is it? And he pointed us up the road into the centre of the town. And anyway, we all fell in, and we all fell in outside this seaman's mission. And Ginger Powers decided he was going to be in charge of us. So we had to do a bit of drill, attention and all that jazz, left turn, right turn and whatnot. Then we all marched up into the centre of Rosario. And it was as dead as a doorknob. Everywhere was shut, all the pubs, all the houses, there was hardly any lights on, you couldn't see hardly anything when we got up there, except for the street lights. And then the bell started playing. The bell started ringing, we was all wondering what was happening. We was all there. Anyway, Ginger Pepper said, when the bell stops ringing, we will sing Auld Lang Syne, all together. And then the bell stopped ringing, and we sang Auld Lang Syne. And then the next thing you know is all the doors open, all the pub doors, all the houses, and we was just mobbed. It was brilliant. We was taken into these different bars, broken up. We was taken into different houses, and we was at party time. And obviously the officers had their own thing. We had guards, special guards and that, but it was wonderful. And it was nice to have a different, and we had all sorts of different drinks given us, bottles, and you were just given a bottle of whatever it was. And then when we sailed from there, we went to Fray Bentos. Now, Fray Bentos is a little town. And once again, you anchored out there and you went and you went, you caught the boat inshore. And I happened to be the boat driver at the time. And we took the boat inshore and with the captain on board. And because he'd got to go with the captain of the Lion to meet the mayor. And how we got him on the jetty, I'll never know, because the jetty was massive. And when there was this rusty ladder there, then the only place that we could see that we could land, and it was half hanging off the wall. But the ingenuity of the coxswain, who was in charge of the boat, he got the boat hooks, and we put the boat nose on or bow on to the jetty with the engine running, and the fore and aft men in the boat put the boat hooks up against the ladder and pressed it against the jetty so that the captain could climb out. And that was the only way, and the postman, I'll tell a lie, and the postman, he went as well, and that's the only way they could get him on board. But anyway, the captain must have mentioned this to somebody, because what happened then is about an hour later, a chap came down to the jetty, because we was tied up, and in his pidgin English, he told us that we'd got to go around the corner, and about half a mile up the thing, and there was another jetty, which we should have landed off in the first place. But it was good. And we had visitors. We didn't have visitors on board. Everywhere you go, you've got visitors on board. And from there, when we was about two or three days there, that's all. And then from there, HMS Lion, HMS Dunkirk, and HMS Leopard were with us on the trip around the South America. Three different classes of ships, as I said, a destroyer and to sail the thing. And then we went through the Straits of Magellan to get to the West Coast. And that was interesting, because the captain had to be very careful going through these straits. It's not as easy as people think. And I can imagine that Drake and all them, when they went through them, was probably in a far worse state than what we was. And we went and we made our way then to Valparaiso in Chile, the naval base for Chile. And once again, we started off with football while the captain and the officers done their duties. and we played in a baseball stadium at this place, a big stadium, but it was a baseball stadium. So we had the main to continue with. And then we had a run ashore, and then the next day we had to go around the naval base, some of us. We were all detailed off, and we had to go little parties around the naval base just to show the Chilean Navy how we dressed and things like that, because I don't suppose half of them had been across, or very few had been across to Europe to see us. And it was nice. We was anchored out once again. And I say anchored out, it was on a long pier, stern to, but you had to catch a boat into Valparaiso. You couldn't walk from the naval base into Valparaiso. You had to catch the Liberty boat. From there, we went to Ecuador, Quito. That was rather a good place to go to, a nice place as well. And that's one thing I found about some of these places. There is some beautiful buildings and some lovely piazzas and whatever around these places. And when we got to Ecuador, there was a cocktail party on board the ship. But then there was a cocktail party at the British Embassy. And some of us naval ratings had to go. But we behaved ourselves. It was different. It was the only time we'd ever been invited to a cocktail party. But there was some senior rates and some of us leading hands, and juniors had to go to the cocktail party. But yeah, it was good. And once again, we anchored out there, and we played football again. I didn't get around the shops very much, because I was running short of money. So I had to be a bit careful on what I was doing. But we had a look around in general, and I think I only went there a short of the cocktail party and one more run after that. Before we came back through the canal again, through the Panama Canal, and we went to Cartagena in Colombia, and we was there for 5 days. Once again, we played football, but this time we also played cricket. Funny place. It was probably more Spanish than anything we'd seen in South America, as happens. But it was still an interesting place, and I went there. I think I went around the church there, because there was something about it that I thought, oh, that's lovely, I must go in there. And I went around the church. I think it's one of the few churches I've ever gone round, so there must have been something special about it, but remembering what it is, I don't know. And from there we went back to Bermuda, because we had to prepare ourselves then. The other ships had sailed from England. The other ships, once we got to through the Panama Canal, they had sailed through the Panama Canal and left us and gone and sailed back to England, calling at different places on en route around the West Indies. And then we went to Cartagena and then on to thing, because we had to prepare, get ourselves painted and decked out and done, made to, because Admiral Lord Mountbatten was coming out to the West Indies. And we was going to meet him, so we had to go and get ourselves spick and span. And then we left. And when that happened, we sailed from Bermuda, and we went straight down to Trinidad and Tobago, where the Admiral of the Fleet, Lord Mountbatten of Burma, was waiting for us. And he came on board, and met all the chief petty officers, and the chief petty officers. And then some of them had met him before, and said, we have met, sir, and which is the usual thing for some people. And they talked about where they'd met and whatever. And then we cleared lower deck, because we, on the whole, most of us were just carrying on our working day. While the officers and the chief petty officers met the admiral, because we had to keep the ship clean and tidy. But when we cleared lower deck, we was all in there. A lot of us was in there working rig and that. But then he gave us a talk about the life in the Navy and what our duties out in the West Indies was. But I've met him once, and he was. I thought he was a nice bloke. And then we went ashore. Well, he went ashore. I don't know where he flew to, Jamaica, I think, but we went to, and of course we got down there, and it was carnival time, just like being in Rio de Janeiro.
At Jamaica?
In Trinidad. The Admiral flew to...
Sorry, I'm missing you.
That's okay, it's my fault. The Admiral flew to Jamaica, and we went ashore then in the evening, and it was carnival time. And it was great. Plenty of dancing, plenty of steel bands and what have you, and pipe music, and the different nationalities. That was one of the things. There was a lot of different a lot of Indians, sort of, might you say, Incas and things like that, for want of a better description, with all their different rigs that they had coming up from the Amazon jungle and from... Lima, Peru, I suppose like everybody else, they drift around the world, and then they bring their little bit of etiquette and thing to the different countries. And then where did we go there then? From there we went to St. Vincent. We went down to Guyana. We went down to Guyana, and that was one of the places where we played a brewery football team. And I've never seen so much beer coming out. And we beat them about 10-0, I think. But it was good. And it was. And we had to anchor in the river. And the speed of the water was somewhere in the region of about 12 to 15 knots. And we anchored. And we had to have a bloke standing on the forecastle all the time, one of the seamen, to see that the anchor didn't drive. We had to keep a main boiler alight in case it was the engines was required. It was a hell of a job to get on and off using the Liberty boats. But we did manage it. And we, as I say, we were playing this brewery at football, and this beer was coming in. And I asked a question. I said, "What's that building now?" I asked a question. I don't ask me why I asked it, but I did. But I asked the question, "What's that building over there?" And I said, "That's where we make our rum." And we said, "Oh, can we have a look around there?" Well, I said, I shall have to go and see the customs officers, one of the directors of this brewery told us. So, anyway, he went and we went around, he took us around the rum distillery, and we said, "Could we, any chance of tasting it?" Once again, I've got to ask the customs and excise officer, and he asked him. Yes, he said, and we each got a thimbleful of rum, and it was 120% proof. Oh my God, I said, and it was good. It was really good. But we left there with a bottle of rum each, Guyana black rum, I took it home to me. I brought it home to my father, and it took him a long, long time. And from there, but then we came back through some of the islands that we hadn't seen on our first run, St. Lucia and St. Vincent and places like that. And then it was farewell time. We nipped across to Bermuda, to Hamilton whilst we was in Bermuda. We nipped across to Hamilton on our way out and spent 3 days there just to say a final farewell to them. And then we sailed for England
on
the 18th of April 1962. I can see that because I've got it on this bit of paper here. And we called back once again to the Azores on the way for fueling. We did. And all the time we was over there, we visited 50 ports. All the time we was in the West Indies.
Now, what happened when he got back?
Well, I got back from the West Indies. My wife and family came on board. They spent 2 hours with me. Then I said, "Bye bye, I'll see you in the morning." I was duty. And then I think, if I remember rightly, I went from there to HMS Sultan.
It looks like it. That's in October 62.
Was it? Can you switch off what's
it? Now, what was HMS Sultan?
HMS Sultan was the naval engineer. Yeah.
Carry on.
I'm just trying to think why I never left the dairy until October. What we done in October?
Well, it doesn't matter. Best move on to HMS Sultan. Okay. What was HMS Sultan?
Well, HMS is an engineer. Is the Royal Naval Engineering School. Like people nowadays, people train in HMS Sultan on the basics. In HMS Raleigh, in the basics, marching and all that jazz. Like my first 6 weeks, remember, and then they go to HMS Sultan for the rest of the engineering training and whatever. And I went there because I was being sent on a course, at HMS Sultan, a leading hands course. I was drafted into there on a leading hands course, engineering course, where you go to school, you do engineering, you make yourself a piece of equipment that you can use in engineering. My project was I had to make myself a little clamp, a vice clamp. That I could use out of a piece of metal. You're given a piece of metal, hammer and chisel, and you have to create this and a file. You have to create then this whatever they've given you to do. Or the you have different things to do. I think six of us or something like that had these vice clamps to make. And you have to chill it out, file it out and drill it and do all sorts of things with it. And then you produce a clamp, which I've still got mine actually. But in the meantime, you're still doing your engineering. You're improving your engineering and finding out things they work better. And you're training, you're marching. Your leadership comes into question as well. And you're also doing guard duties. This is one of the things that they insist on. In other words, the ship's company don't do guard duties. The trainees do the guard duties. Even though you're walking the barracks at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they still expect you to be in school at 8 o'clock, ready for lessons, etc., and be bright and breezy all day. And then I finished, and that's when I lost my mother, when I was in HMS Sultan. She passed away in the April of...
How long were you there for? Because it sounds like a long course.
I was there 11 months. It's a 13-week course, and then you become then you have to wait for the draft. And I was sent down to the living quarters of people on course to make sure the mess decks down there were kept clean and tidy. And I hadn't got a draft at all at that time, and while I was down there, I was fed up to the back teeth with virtually doing nothing. So I sent the chief stoker down there, and I says, "Have you got any? Do you know if there's any courses going, chief, that I could do whilst I'm here?" I said, "Because I'm getting fed up with this job." I said, "It's so boring." And he had a look through a program that he got, and he said, "Yeah." And he said, "There's an engineer's office writer's course going." He said, If you want to, I said, "Well, can I go and put my name down or see if I can get on the course?" He said, "Go and see Petty Officer so and so, Newman, I think his name was. Go and see Petty Officer, we call him Newman. Go and see Petty Officer Newman," he said. "Tell him I've sent you, and that if there's any vacancies on the course, can you sit the course?" And I said, "Righto." So anyway, I went up and seen this Petty Officer, and he said, "Yeah, I got room on the course," he said.
And what is this? An engineer's writer?
Marine Engineer's Office Writer.
And what's that?
Well, this is a man who looks after all the paperwork and types the letters for the engineer officer. Basically, he's the engineer officer's secretary. And you've got the ship's company writers who look after the captain and the ship's company's. Then you've got the electrical people, and you've got the engineering people. And we're the only three people, the ship's company stands for itself, but we're the only two technical people that have writers, because we have so much paperwork.